So let's look at some key components of a trauma-informed school. Really having a definition of what that means, because I think there can be trauma-informed schools everywhere. There's 100,000 schools, and I bet you in 100,000 schools, and here's where your thinking, your experience, your knowledge is going to be important to wherever you live and work, because that definition is going to come from you working with your local school or school district. It's about enhancing trauma awareness. Conducting a thorough assessment of the school climate, including to me inclusiveness. How much do we welcome every single person in that school, no matter what they look like, no matter where they come from in the world, like in LA, and having a respect for that level of diversity. We need to look at the protective factors and the risk factors in the school, because like a family, every school is different, and it really depends on who's the leader of the school. I mean, I was a school person for 30 years, went to all these kinds of different schools. It depended on who the principal was. If the principal said, I don't want to know about it because then I have to do something, and I literally heard somebody say that to me. I was just stunned. Or, you know, this is really a part of learning. We need to know what these kids are going through. We need to understand, you know, their experiences. Developing trauma-informed discipline policies, because to me, that's the heart of it. Are you going to just, you know, and it came also from the national level. The gun, you know, reducing gun violence, there was a law back in, I don't know, the 90s. It was after Columbine that had to do with zero tolerance. You have a gun, you have a knife, you have a fork, you know, you have a finger with a sharp fingernail, you could get suspended, right, Priscilla? You could just get suspended. They don't want to know the details. You're just out of here. Go somewhere. Find a place. Awareness of the prevalence and impact of secondary traumatic stress on teachers and staff. And this is the area now that we're very concerned about. Dr. Walker has been working in Newtown, and immediately after the tragedy there, I traveled there with Melissa Brimer, Dr. Brimer from the network, and you can believe that the level of traumatic stress on the teachers throughout that school district is quite high. So here are my questions. What is a trauma-informed school? So where you live, what does that mean? Who are the populations and the groups in your school? So you can go to an LA school, and when we first started doing our work, we were doing it with immigrant children who had been in the U.S. 3 years or less. So who were in these schools? They were children from West Armenia that spoke West Armenian. I didn't know there was a West Armenian language, but apparently there is, right? They were kids from Korea. They were kids from Vietnam. They were kids from Russia, kids from Central America and Mexico. Who are the populations? And our first interactions with them, because remember, we started this back in 1997, was that they had come from Central America and they had been caught in the war in El Salvador. So their exposure was in a war-torn country. Who is in your school? We talked about military families. We talked about, you know, gay, lesbian, and transgender and all of that. Who is in the school? Because each and every one of those children is so important. And are we including all of them in our efforts, in our thinking, in our care? And what are the important elements? So I go back to, some of you may know about Ginny Strand over at Fordham, and in her grant for the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, she organized a class to train social workers, and it's the core concepts of child trauma. And I thought, you know what, if we're talking about that and we're supposed to be the content experts, we should probably use that. But think about how we translate that for educators, because it's a clinical definition of core concepts. If we're going to say it's trauma-informed, we have to have some concepts, core concepts, as our organizing framework. How are we going to organize teachers? How are teachers going to organize themselves to create a trauma-informed school? What is the educational policy? So Priscilla was talking about, you know, a kid with a fingernail, and we're just going to suspend them. We're not going to ask anything about what led to this, what's going on in their lives. We're just going to suspend these kids and like leave them out on their own. How does it affect teaching? Are we going to teach differently? And what kind of assessment skills do teachers need? So we're all sitting here in the room as clinicians, but we haven't translated what do teachers really need to know in order to teach children who are traumatized? Do we have interventions that are preventive? Do we have selected populations, do we have interventions, or for certain kinds of situations? Do we have early interventions? Do we have intermediate interventions? Do we have tertiary interventions? Do we have them in our schools that reflect what a trauma-informed school really means? Can educators discard widely held assumptions? You know what? It doesn't matter. The ones that'll get, I'll close my door. How many times have I heard that? Teachers union member for 20 years. I close my door. I'm going to teach to my class. That's how it's going to work. You know, and they'll get it. Understanding trauma-generated behavior. So, wait, this didn't happen. What's happening here in my class? I just got in here. You're throwing stuff around. You're picking a fight. What happened? Well, it may not have happened in your class. It may have happened on the way to school. It may have happened last night. It may have been happening time after time after time when you go home. So can teachers accept that they do have an important role about helping with behaviors that didn't come from the school? And that we need to look at behavior in the context of safety if we're talking about children who are traumatized. We have to talk teacher language. So they talk about students ready to learn. The children who live in communities of high poverty and crime and gang violence and shootings and murders are not in the same place ready to learn. They have good brains, but their brains are otherwise occupied. And can we help teachers to think about attachment? Really, if you're going to be an effective teacher, you've got to think about that first. You know, I've heard all the talk about educational reform over and over again, about the transformation of education. Well, you've got to have trust before you can have transformation. So you can do the learning walks, and you can do the coaching, and you can do the new math ways, and you can do the new teaching and all those kind of stuff. But you've got to have that trust and develop that behave that relationship, because otherwise emotional regulation becomes the issue in the classroom. You know, open up go to Chaz in the morning and look at whether or not there's emotional regulation, and you're just like jumping jacks everywhere. You know, kids just swearing and carrying on and, you know, pushing and shoving and yelling and all that, and then they get in the classroom and you can see it kind of calm down. But emotional regulation becomes really an objective. And lack of academic interest or progress. And our studies culminated in a survey which we sent out to 35,000 children. We got 28,600 back. We got those surveys back. And what we discovered is that it's what we all know. If they have been exposed to violence, their rates of expulsion, suspension, absenteeism, dropout just is off the charts. That association has already been made. And I don't think it's ever been factored into educational reform. Services and programs. These are just a suggested list. I thought about the IOM spectrum of prevention to tertiary interventions and tried to think about some of the things are that we talked about in this room. And these are some of the things that are going on both at CHAZ as well as things that are going on in the LA Unified School District. And part of that is the ability of educators to participate in threat and risk assessment. As we know, these children are more highly at risk for suicide. And according to the Secret Service and the FBI, when they look at school shooters, suicide and homicide to them are two sides of the same coin. There's a period of high emotional lability where it can go either way, where they consider seriously suicide at sometimes, and then they turn and they consider homicide. The way that suspension has been dealt with in school district does not result in positive behaviors and can intensify misbehaviors by increasing shame, alienation, rejection. And a study from Texas found that students are 5 times more likely to drop out, 6 times more likely to repeat a grade, 3 times more likely to have contact with the juvenile justice system if suspended. And it goes on and on. This is some of the language that is embedded in the course about a traumatized preoccupation, a child's preoccupation with danger and need for safety. And if that's what we understand a trauma-informed school is about, that has to be the first consideration as we begin to establish relationships with kids in the school. So it means a change in priority for teaching, and teaching strategies and all of the services that are in the schools that are coordinated to provide stability and safety in the environment. It's also a willingness to assess the changes in a child's behavior, because educators seem to think, okay, I did this already. You know, why do I need to do anything different? Because a traumatized child's behavior changes from moment to moment, depending on their interaction with peers and teachers, depending upon what it is that sort of triggers those traumatic reminders and that triggers those traumagenic behaviors. And here are my sort of modifications to Jenny's top 12 core concepts of trauma and traumatic experience. Well, first of all, it's understanding that it often occurs outside the school. It's not something that teachers necessarily created, although they can add to it, but that they have to accept that it occurs outside the school and that they have the ability to respond to it. That it does have to do with learning in the brain, and that the culture, the social norms and values, and all the things we talked about yesterday can either support that child or can work against that child's ability to function in schools. That children exhibit that wide range of reactions, and that danger and safety are the core concerns for these kids. So when we teach and when we're on the school campus, how do we help them feel safe? That traumatic events outside the school can also generate reminders in the hallway, in the classroom, and anywhere on school grounds, and that these experiences at school can add to or trigger their ability to regulate their emotions and to learn. There are protective factors. Yesterday, someone talked about that one person that a child can go to that just can mediate against all of these other factors, and that trauma, we have to understand there are special populations where trauma plays a major role. And among them, child welfare, juvenile justice, children in special ed, who are often the targets of victimization. Children in areas of poverty, gang violence, crime, children with mental health challenges, and the list goes on. And lastly, trauma-generated behaviors are complex but can be understood. And a positive teacher-school relationship can be all the difference. So trust before learning and teaching, and teachers watch out for that secondary trauma.